Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On track one, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, current research data, and his clinical experience. On track two, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track three features an interview with our special guest, who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 6, Number 2. In the last edition of SNU, I got right back to basics and talked about whole foods and quality nutrition. Health begins and ends with fresh, organic, whole food. And when it comes to optimum health, food is 50% of the game. The other is training and exercise. If you fail to apply and improve your application in either category, you will never achieve your ultimate state as an athlete, or for that matter, a human being. Premature collapse, disease, and decay long before your time is inevitable. Food is still taken for granted by millions of people, and it's really amazing to me how so many people still don't get the connection between food and all of the many related health problems that plague our society. As Dr. Colgan states in the opening first chapter of his great new book, Nutrition for Champions, our food is killing us. Acceleration of food technology over the last 100 years, he goes on to say, worsened the distortion beyond measure, and has presented us today with a vast selection of edibles that bear no relation to our ancient nutrition. On this edition of SNU, I'd like to get into a topic that some will find controversial, others will be intrigued. But it's a topic that demands attention because of how it affects our children, destroys the lives of thousands of adults, and poses a threat to the very economy of health and performance itself. Never mind terrorism, the terror that is a major concern is how people live and eat. The topic I'm referring to now, though, is drugs, and I'm not talking about performance-enhancing drugs like steroids or prescription drugs like COX-2 inhibitors, or they'll kill you too. I want to talk about the drugs that many people don't know or understand at all but use every day, and those who don't use them and know nothing about. I'd like to review the physiological effects and use of the six most common recreational drugs, namely coffee, alcohol, tobacco, cannabis, ecstasy, and cocaine. Why, you might ask? Because of their widespread use among athletes. At least 99% of elite competitive athletes use at least one of these recreational substances. And how about you? Which of these six substances do you use? Do you use coffee, alcohol, tobacco, cannabis, ecstasy, or cocaine? Because if you do, you are a recreational drug user. Now, knowing how these substances affect the body can help us make an informed, educated decision. Ignoring the issues or pretending the problem doesn't exist doesn't make them go away, especially when it's a spouse or one of your children. And finally, telling people, especially young people, not to use drugs because they are quote-unquote bad will absolutely not prevent them from experimenting with them. Who are the idiots that actually believe this? Any parent or teacher today will attest to this fact. We have spent billions of dollars on commercials and advertising campaigns saying no to drugs, the war on drugs, a total, absolute, dismal failure. Education, self-esteem, that's the ticket. This review is not intended as a means of drug promotion. Are you kidding? No. Nor is it a sermon about their ill effects or how drug use can ruin the minds of our youth. Billions of people worldwide consume recreational drugs, and believe me, your husband, your daughter, your next door neighbor is using them, and you don't have a freaking clue. Do you know how many couples I know? I'm talking about married couples, couples that have been married 10, 20, 30 years, and their spouse is on cocaine, cannabis, ecstasy, whatever, and the other spouse has no knowledge whatsoever. It's unbelievable. The trick, it seems, is one of management rather than abstinence. Sobriety does not appear to be an effective or practical solution. In surveys of college and high school students, for example, only 1.4% of college athletes and 5% of high school athletes use steroids, compared to 80% alcohol, 30% cannabis, 25% tobacco, 5% psychedelic drugs, and 3% amphetamines. And of course, all these kids have been inundated with, say no to drugs, you're a loser if you do drugs, you're bad if you do drugs. Opium, cannabis, mushrooms, cocoa leaves, and peyote cactus have been utilized since the dawn of time by priests, shamans, religious leaders, teachers, politicians, writers, philosophers, and medicine men. Intelligence is obviously not a factor associated with sobriety. You name it, and someone down your street, up your alley, or around the corner in plain sight is using a recreational substance. These substances do have medical application. They provide such effects as pain relief, mood elevation, change of consciousness, aphrodisiac effects, and interactive social pleasure. And I particularly am interested in the aphrodisiac application. Neither law nor fear of even death as a penalty have eliminated their use historically, and regardless of their legal, social, moral, ethical, religious, and philosophical implications, recreation drugs have always been and will always be with us. I saw a bumper sticker the other day that read, "Man made alcohol, but God made cannabis." The majority of recreational substances in current use today exist as natural constituents of plants. For example, LSD, or lysergic acid diethylamide, was originally derived from ergot, a fungus on rye and wheat. Mescaline is the active principle of peyote cactus, and psilocybin comes from certain types of mushrooms that grow right from the ground. Many seeds and vines contain hallucinogenic alkaloids, and even banana peels contain bufotenine, an alleged hallucinogen originally isolated from toad skins. Coffee, alcohol, and tobacco are foods and concentrated drugs when isolated. However, most people have been convinced by governments and public education to think of them as safe only as when applied as a non-drug substances that are relatively safe or at least socially acceptable. For example, if you drink alcohol or smoke tobacco, you probably don't think of yourself as a drug user or a drug addict or a loser. If you drink moderate amounts of alcohol or drink coffee every day and I asked, "Do you take drugs?" you would probably say no. But you'd be wrong, based on the pharmacological definition of a drug, which, by the way, a very broad conventional definition of a drug is any chemical other than food that affects living processes. If the effect helps the body, the drug is a medicine. However, if a drug causes a harmful effect on the body, the drug is considered a poison. The same chemical can be a medicine and a poison depending on conditions of use. Now, cue in on that, conditions of use, and the person using it. How you take it, when you take it, the amount you take is relative to the effect and the outcome. Then, of course, there is prescription drug use and abuse. Again, if you used acetaminophen or Tylenol daily for pain relief or occasionally for headaches or oxapam for treating anxiety, you most likely wouldn't think of yourself belonging to the same group of people who use cannabis, cocaine, or ecstasy, but you do. Athletes consume recreational drugs for the purposes of stimulation, performance enhancement, relaxation, and stress management. Many use them simply for fun. Athletes consume drugs for the same reasons as everyone else, often for their mind-altering and pleasurable effects. Steroids and recreational drugs often go hand in hand, as steroid users typically exhibit high-risk behavior, causing them to follow a lifestyle that can lead to health problems or even death. When cycling on and off steroids, recreational drugs are frequently used for depression associated with the washout phase. But let's keep in mind that the vast majority of recreational drug users and abusers in North America and the world have never used anabolic steroids. So you can't say that using steroids leads to the use of other drugs and vice versa. It's just a correlation through observation. One must also distinguish the difference between substance use and substance abuse, and there's a big difference, although there are those who feel that consuming any amount of an illicit substance illustrates abusive behavior. During Prohibition, 1920 to 1933, alcohol was illegal to purchase like cocaine today, whereas today in any store, gas station in America, you can buy alcohol. Cocaine used to be legal and was actually added to the original Coca-Cola formula and was routinely added to wine. In Optimum Sports Nutrition, Dr. Colgan states, a fiendish Corsican chemist, Angelo Mariani, added the new alkaloid cocaine to wine, and Vin Mariani, with 24 milligrams cocaine per 4-ounce glass, became the overnight hit of Europe. Endorsed by Pope Leo XIII, now that guy must have been a cool pope, the spiked wine addicted hundreds of thousands of people, including writers Jules Verne and Alexander Dumas. Well, recreational drugs definitely have a dark side, there's no doubt about it, but then so do vitamins, food, medication, exercise, and, God forbid, even sex. Tolerance to drugs varies as much as tolerance to food. It is obvious that drug abuse is a syndrome of multiple causative factors, including emotional, sociological, physiological, psychological, biochemical, and even spiritual. Most of us tend to judge the difference between drug use and abuse from a practical perspective when our work and eating habits, social demeanor, health, performance, and overall behavior is negatively affected. We think drug abuse. Certainly, there is a scientific basis to the use versus abuse postulate. Risk of damage is generally consistent with frequency of use and quantity consumed. For example, one cup of coffee daily versus 12. Is it possible to consume recreational drugs in limited amounts without harming the body and mind? Does every consumer of an illicit drug end up on Skid Row? Does recreational drug use compromise or enhance athletic performance? If used with discretion and control, do recreational drugs have a neutral or even a positive effect? God forbid. Do mind-altering drugs expand our consciousness or destroy it? To add a further perspective, does the widespread consumption of refined, processed, man-made factory food affect the brain and immune system in such a way that our tolerance to recreational drugs is diminished, our ability to metabolize them weakened, and our perception of their need distorted to the point of dependence? Is there a correlation between addiction to refined food in childhood and youth, its effect on blood sugar, insulin resistance, brain biochemistry, and drug addiction in adulthood? Let's get some facts straight first. Alcohol and tobacco cause more death and disease and destroy more families than all the illicit hard drugs combined, including heroin, crack cocaine, and crystal meth. For every heroin addict, there are tens of thousands of alcoholics. For every person who dies from an overdose of crack cocaine, thousands are dying from cancer or vascular disease and stroke caused by tobacco smoking. Is this because both alcohol and tobacco are legal and therefore more accessible? Or is it because they are far more toxic and addictive than what we have been led to believe? Do exercise and a whole food diet protect us from addiction and potential side effects of recreational drug use? Can we just burn them off the next day in the gym? If exercise is habit-forming and changes our state of mind, should it be regulated, controlled, and taxed by the government, or even banned? These questions and others like them raise strong disagreements and social debate. The so-called moralists and fundamentalists are anti-drug. The drug consumers want the right to their freedom of choice. Drugs are a topic of enormous controversy. Their use is a personal, private concern, and for many, highly secretive, but it becomes a public concern when lives are lost, when innocent people are negatively affected, and when the detrimental effects of drug use, be they legal or not, increase the economic burden on the healthcare system, or what I more accurately refer to as a disease management business for profit. In the end, it may be the economics of healthcare and court costs and the observation of their use and abuse in relation to education that will determine the final outcome, not religion and morality, I hope. One thing's for sure. History proves you can't legislate morality or force people to love themselves enough so they won't willingly destroy themselves. Functional medicine judges the use of food, supplements, and any substance we consume in relation to the identification of biomarkers and outcome. If the effects of recreational drugs on our individual health or on the health of our society are negative, then reform through education, not enforcement, is necessary. National prohibition of alcohol, the so-called noble experiment, was undertaken to reduce crime and corruption, solve social problems, reduce the tax burden created by prisons and poorhouses, and improve health and hygiene in America. The results of that experiment clearly indicate that it was a miserable failure on all counts. Moral issues and philosophy are predominantly subjective. And let's not forget, in the real world, drugs are big business. None of the active principles of psychotropic drugs are essential to the nutritional chemistry of man. Agreed. Both caffeine and nicotine, for example, have no known physiological requirement. In other words, if you don't consume them, you won't die of a deficiency of them. Alcohol, like cocaine or ecstasy, is an option. From a rational or logical point of view, then, it's important to understand the effect of the drug on the chemistry of the body and mind and to analyze the mechanism of its action. After all, aren't we here to live? And so why would you want to destroy yourself in the process of being alive? You're going to die, for sure, which is why some people do them. They're terrified of death, so they use drugs to escape. But what about the people that love themselves, that love life, and want to use drugs for fun? Can you imagine that? This provides everyone with a more complete understanding of the cost-to-risk-to-benefit ratio, and that cost-to-risk-to-benefit ratio is something that the educated mind considers. An educated mind, by the way, is guided by reason, intellect, and common sense, not by fear, religious prejudice, peer pressure, or transient social values. The issue is really about understanding the chemistry of the substance on the body and acknowledging its effect. Some people should never touch caffeine, while others have more tolerance. We know, for example, that when you drink more than 4 to 6 cups per day of coffee, which supplies about 200 to 600 milligrams of caffeine, depending on the strength, a whole range of health concerns become possible. But once again, it's really a question of how it affects the individual, how well hydrated they are, the quality of their diet, and how well their liver is able to effectively metabolize and detoxify that particular substance. In many cases, it's an issue of enzyme chemistry and the overall functional capacity of the liver, which for many adults in North America is compromised. So over the next several editions of SNU, we will explore 6 of the most commonly used recreational drugs used today by the masses and examine their chemistry and influence on human physiology, and I, for one, am really going to enjoy it. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening, and here's a quote from American novelist and social critic William S. Burroughs. The idea that addiction is somehow a psychological illness is, I think, totally ridiculous. It's as psychological as malaria. It's a matter of exposure. People, generally speaking, will take any intoxicant or any drug that gives them a pleasant effect if it is available to them.